Hello, and thank you for joining the Connection Therapy Podcast. This is a podcast about the craft of psychotherapy, and we seek to support those who strive to improve their craft by sharing research about the science and stories about the art of psychology. Together, we will explore these findings so you can decide how you want to apply them to benefit your practice. Did you know that over 75% of the categories of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Health Disorders are characterized by problems with emotion regulation? That is to say that 75% of the categories addressed by mental health therapists tend to be characterized by problems with emotion regulation. That's a quote from the article I'm going to review today. And the implication therein is that we need to understand how to assess improvements in emotion regulation if we're going to be able to ensure there are lasting improvements in mental health therapy. In the spirit of learning how to track all the things that are happening in mental health therapy sessions, like I've been discussing on the most recent episodes, our skills in integrating the multiple feedback channels we have as therapists, both being able to attune to our own systems and thoughts and feelings as distinct from our patients, and then when we include animals in the therapy, understanding how there's co-regulation across all living creatures in the environment, to me, is going to become increasingly important as we get better at mental health therapy in terms of understanding what it is that really makes therapy effective and alleviates symptoms for patients. So this article is in the spirit of understanding more about that, and we're going to spend a few episodes on this article because it's really in depth. So I'm just going to highlight a few things in this episode because it's really complex, and it's on the heels of one of the last episodes that talked about the RDoC, or the research domain criteria. So previously that was a research framework. This one is a therapeutic framework, so probably more useful for us as practicing therapists, and that's why we're going to spend some time with it. The name of the article is Synchrony in Psychotherapy, a Review and an Integrative Framework for the Therapeutic Alliance. Authors are Kuhl and Schatcher, and it was published in Frontiers in Psychology, June of 2016. That's right, this has been around for 10 years, and I'm not sure why we haven't heard much about it. At least I'll speak for myself, because it's actually incredible. So let's first start with some definitions. They're talking about the alliance, and that's simply the patient-therapist relationship. And the reason they're focusing on that is they highlight that there are, quote, presently at least 500 psychotherapies within clinical psychology which share certain formal characteristics but differ in the contents. 500. You know, as a side note, they don't mention this, but I would like to. We really need to be thinking about our profession overall and how many options there are for patients and why it can be so confusing. You know, not the least of which, there are so many styles of therapy. There are so many styles of therapists. And now, you know, with the advent of technology that incorporates a lot of these features, I think articles like this are extremely timely for us to get back to, no matter how it's being done, but what are the things that actually matter. And that is what they've done here, is summarize their version of what they call alliance research, so that patient-therapist relationship. And they have many studies on that, which I'll review in a future episode. But then they introduce this idea of synchrony, and they explain the alliance is an interpersonal phenomenon, and as a result, the things that are part of interpersonal relationships are clearly relevant to understanding how this alliance or a patient-therapist relationship works. Then they discuss interpersonal synchrony. And it's simply this, and I love this statement. Whenever people interact, they are inclined to spontaneously synchronize their neural, perceptual, affective, physiological, and behavioral responses. That is just the whole gamut. And synchrony, then, they go back to the Greek word's origins there, explaining that this simply means occurring at the same time. So we're going to kind of have a spoiler alert here of how this article ends up, like the things they end up suggesting. And I located this article because I was researching how this works in equine-assisted therapy as well. And so I'll link that article in the show notes also, because they gave a nice summary of the interpersonal synchrony model and described its three levels of interaction dynamics. The first level underscores the perceptual and motor processes that can be observed, such as movement and, get this, interbrain coupling. Yeah, not all of us are going to be able to measure this yet, but there are lots of ways that technology is catching up. At the second level, the alliance shows up as the interplay between the therapist's and patient's cognitive appraisals, beliefs, and interpretations. So I'll say more about that in a second, but it's the third level where emotion regulation is observable, both in implicit and explicit regulation processes. But what I find most fascinating about this article, and this is why it's going to need a couple episodes to describe, is they're doing those levels on different scales of time. What? I know, hold on. Because some of these things, remember, we've had episodes on the podcast before. Think about Beatrice Beebe's work, where it's milliseconds that are something below our conscious awareness is able to pick up teeny little micro expressions or changes in voice prosody and tone in fractions of a second. And so that's how this model is organized, is they have the first level on a time scale they call phasic, which runs from a few hundred milliseconds to about 10 seconds. The second one is what they call tonic, which runs from 10 seconds to about an hour. And the third one is chronic, which you might think of more as just time in general, which runs from several weeks to years. So fascinating. So now we've got this really fun, like, multidimensional model, and it just opens up so many ways to see what's happening in the therapy session. And as I mentioned, some other researchers have taken this and applied it to the interactions in equine-assisted therapy sessions. So to me, this is where we need to get to as a field, is understanding the multiple complex dynamics that are happening in our therapy sessions. So what are we going to do about all this as practicing therapists? Well, let's consider that. I think the first thing is, let's not get overwhelmed, yeah? There's a lot happening. And we, at this point, are practiced humans. So it isn't that all of this hasn't been happening in interpersonal relationships up to this point in our lives. And more than likely, most people who tend toward the field of psychotherapy have kind of increased empathic skills and observations and sort of awareness of others anyway. Actually, that's how I entered the field myself. I used to work for technology companies, and I could understand some things. Like I when I was growing up, I really loved the Discovery Channel, and I used to think to myself that human behavior can be largely summarized by how animals operate. You know, I used to watch these episodes as a kid, and, you know, they'd always talk about kind of the lion packs and the hyena packs and sort of how they're socially motivated, and yet they're living on the Saharan desert or wherever they were filming. And so they had this complexity of needing to survive. And so their social, you know, relationships would be affected by their need for survival. And I used to think, well, you know, that's not unlike humans. And then one of my first classes in college was an economics class, both macro and microeconomics, which means that you're learning about the ways that large groups of humans kind of on a big scale or macro scale, the economics tend to work, and then compare that to how they work on an individual scale or microeconomics. And so after I heard about that, I thought, you know, a lot of human behavior could probably be predicted by either something you see on Discovery Channel or by the principles of economics. I still stand by that, actually. But of course, having studied psychology now, I realize it's much more complex than that. But you can see the roots of my interest in understanding how our human understanding of relationships is something we share with mammals and animals in general, and how that when we're under stress, like we don't tend to usually be on a desert, but we certainly have survival needs that kind of override our behaviors at times, and maybe even the behaviors we would like to do because everything is in the service of survival. So those are some ways that I have entered into the field of psychology. And, you know, having learned about all of the interventions that we do as talk therapists primarily, that is at kind of like what Panksepp was talking about. There's sort of multiple levels of systems that a lot of our talk therapy interventions occur at the levels where we're sort of cognitively calm and we can think about things and we can reflect on them. And for the patient populations that I've been fortunate to serve, mainly early in my training in particular, children and especially children affected by trauma and abuse, those thinking capacities weren't present. And so I had to really learn how to listen and understand patients of all ages, and a lot of times patients who could not yet speak to me. And if they could, they're sort of parroting back what they thought they should be saying based on the well-meaning adults in their world that, you know, said everything was fine and things are good and all of that. And sometimes things are fine and then sometimes things are good, but, you know, when they're not, there weren't many words for that because oftentimes the trauma and abuse was just so overwhelming that people don't have a language for it. So being able to read and attune to the signals that, like a child, for example, is displaying through their play and tolerate that when it's not, you know, what you hope it is a large part of the way that I have integrated what they're saying in this article. And now we get this option to kind of parse it up and think about it on all these different levels. Because I think for me, the fun part about considering working in this way is you get to kind of be very present and consciously thoughtful about your presence on these different timescales. When and if you have like a miscue, you know, maybe one of your behavioral movements or physical movements or voice prosody was a bit off. One thing I do all the time, and at first patients think I'm kind of, well, I think they probably always think I'm a bit unusual, but I will highlight that, you know, I'll make a comment like, oh, you know, I feel like when you said that, I kind of responded with a flat tone of voice. I didn't mean to do that. I was trying to take in what you said, but I realized that when I came back with that flat kind of uh-huh, or however I say it, you might have thought that I wasn't taking in the severity of what you were describing to me. You know, there's little things like interventions like that where I go back all the time in these, you know, small second kind of movements where, you know, I know that they know that I know that they know kind of thing, if that makes sense. So, in other words, especially when you're working with teenagers, I love working with teenagers in part for many reasons. One of them is that teenagers are still at that part of life where everything matters. Every little breath you take, that's a song, I suppose, but every way you move your eyes, every sigh, every, you know, body movement is so much more intense for that age. And for those of us who have been a while since we were at that age, you might be more sort of conditioned, but once you kind of remember all those steps of what it's like to learn how to interrelate and try to, you know, participate in the world, then you can really slow things down and have a partner, so to speak, in this alliance where your patient-therapist relationship can inform and explore all of the ways that this alliance is either working or not working. And, you know, with teenagers, a lot of times they'll kind of blow it off at first, like, oh, it's so boring. Why are you doing that? So annoying. Why do you do that? But that's usually a good sign, because that means that you're featuring in their world, and that's better than not featuring. In summary, let's highlight a few things here. I'm kind of getting pretty excited about all of this, and maybe I need to slow down and take my own advice here and try to make sense of it better. So this article talks about interpersonal synchrony and specifically related to the therapeutic alliance, which they're describing as the patient-therapist relationship. And what they're suggesting is that when people interact with each other, we are inclined, in other words, we sort of naturally do spontaneously synchronize our neural, perceptual, affective, so emotional, physiological, and behavioral responses. As a side note here, one of the things I do in some of my classes is when I'm trying to demonstrate the behavioral ones, I actually ask a student, and now I'll never be able to do this again since I'm going to say it on the podcast, but I ask a student to just come up to the front of the room with me. You know, I ask for a volunteer to participate in an exercise, and they don't know what the exercise is, and I just say, would you please come up to the front of the room with me? And so I have lots of great students who have said yes to that invitation, and it doesn't take long, just a few seconds. And then I ask them to freeze their movements, and we both freeze. And there will be not that many seconds pass before the two of us have nearly identical body positions. It's really uncanny. They will often match the direction of my feet. They'll kind of move their head or shoulders in the way that I'm moving. And sometimes I move inadvertently myself. And it doesn't take long until we're both matched. So that's one of the ways that we're talking about this spontaneously synchronization here. So the idea here is that that happens in our therapy sessions. And these authors have come up with an interpersonal synchrony model of psychotherapy that has three different levels to it that are separated by time duration, the shortest of which is a few hundred milliseconds to about 10 seconds. So that's what we're looking at here. And the longest, there are three levels, and the longest one is several weeks to years. So now we're invited to consider these different time horizons in our work as mental health therapists, and also then within those time horizons, look for synchrony as reflective of the therapeutic alliance between us and our patients. Right now, I'm just going to stop with that, because I'm going to invite you to spend the next week considering those three time horizons and what you can see or feel or observe or intuit in those moments. And as always, I would love to hear from you how this is working. There are links in the show notes to email me or message me somehow. And in the meantime, I hope that's a fun exercise to consider what this might be like in your therapy sessions. And we'll continue next week. Thanks. I hope you'll join us again for future explorations in the field of psychology. And if you'd like to take a step further, there are additional ways to obtain more education and support on our website, connectiontherapypodcast.com. While there, you will find information about the authors and studies featured in the podcast episodes. Also, you will see a schedule of live trainings I offer on the topics featured in the podcast. And you will find information about the Connection community, a growing group of mental health clinicians dedicated to the study and practice of psychotherapy. Please check out our website, connectiontherapypodcast.com, to learn more. Thanks. Until next time.